Welcome to this special edition of the Huffites Institute's weekly audio podcast. You're hearing an audio-only portion from the Huffites Discussion. The Huffites Discussion is where we bring leaders in sports medicine and human performance together, give them the microphone for 15 minutes, and have them tell us their big ideas. As I said, you're listening to the audio-only portion. You can go to the website for the Huffites Institute at huffitesinstitute.org and get the full video and check out the speakers' bios. We'll be putting a new one up every 2 weeks. So thank you for downloading us, thank you for listening, and we hope you enjoy. Our speaker this week is Dr. Stella Volpe, who is the professor and chair of the Department of Nutritional Sciences at Drexel University. She's also co-director of their newly established Center for Integrative Nutrition and Performance. Her talk is titled, Avoid the Muffin Top, Obesity Prevention Through Lifestyle Changes.
Thank you, Dr. Lightfoot. Oh boy, I'm always louder than I think I am. It's really an honor to be here, and thank you all for coming today. And I want to say hello to our friends out at the University of Kentucky, and also to my friend Dr. Laura Carlson at University of New England, and to my alma mater, Virginia Tech, who's also here today. So let's go Hokies. Your university here is absolutely beautiful. So again, thank you. So today I'm going to go Aggies, right? Okay, good. Hope you win on Sunday. Okay, so my talk to you today is called Avoid the Muffin Top. Let's prevent obesity through lifestyle changes. And you can see here that obesity, you know, runs the gamut of all ages. And about 63% of Americans are either overweight or obese. The next 20-some slides will depict for you what obesity looks like in the United States. So let me just orient you to this first slide. This first slide shows you that in 1985, probably before many of you were even a thought in your parents' eye, that we had very little obesity in the United States. So the colors depict how the percent of obesity within each state. So for example, here you could see the lighter blues mean that 10 to 14% of people in that state are obese. Okay, now keep an eye on this because here goes each year. These are developed by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The numbers, the states are getting darker, meaning the numbers of people within each state are becoming more obese, a higher percentage. Oh, in 1991, we need a new color because we now have 15 to 19% obesity in these states. 92, here we go. And now we have another color, 1997, because now greater than 20% of people within those states are obese. It still gets more. And now, in 2001, we have a state that has greater than 25% of its the people who live there are obese. Oh, in 2005, we have another color, which is greater than 30% of the people living in that state are obese. And the most recent data we have stops at 2009. Now, personally, I don't mind the colors orange and maroon, right? Virginia Tech? Okay, but we shouldn't be happy that we changed those colors and that so many states now have more than 30% or greater than 15% of obesity within their states, except for Colorado, and Dr. Court knows that. But okay, my research is obesity prevention and diabetes prevention. People typically come to me looking like this and want to move to this in about 5 minutes, right? So that's not going to happen. I tell them it didn't take them 5 minutes to get that way. It's going to take some time for me to work with them. So what comprises lifestyle changes? You probably all could shout them out to me, but let me list them for you just to make it easier. Obviously, exercise, and we've heard that from several or all of our speakers, actually. And not just exercise to work out, by the way. You see all these girls at this private school, I actually sit on a balance ball at my desk, that you need to keep active throughout the day. Take the stairs, sit on a balance ball, you know, park farther away from where you're going to go. Eating healthily, which I'll focus on that a little bit more. Decreasing stress, and you're looking at me like, yeah, right. Finals are coming up soon, right? Sleeping well. You're supposed to smile at that one. Do you see the little dog, the dog and the baby? Okay. And then, thank you. And then balancing everything together is a pretty tough thing, but that's really important too. So what makes us eat more? Let's focus on the food part. What makes us actually eat more? Well, you probably know we have all these physiological internal cues. You know, I can throw things out at you like ghrelin and leptin and PPY to make myself sound smart. But really, let's focus on the external cues. And there are a lot of external cues that probably drive us to eat more than anything. Right? Thinking about food. Now you seeing the picture of her thinking about food makes you think about food, right? Okay, we're focusing. We're focusing, Jock. The next thing is, you know, just craving food. And you see these fish are craving sushi. Thought you'd like that? Okay, thank you. It's always tough after a break, isn't it? I've got to really get you. The other thing is learn behaviors. So sometimes it's just what you've learned over the years. And the older we get, by the way, those learned behaviors are pretty tough to break. Very related to the learned behaviors are eating habits. And then how available food is to us. And in the United States, food is pretty darn available. As a matter of fact, we eat about, we have about 3,500 calories per day per person, which is a lot more on average than each of us might need. And then seeing food. Have you ever just walked by a bakery and said, "Ooh, I'm going to go in"? For me, that would be like an ice cream place. Oh, let's go in because there's ice cream. Even if you're not hungry, then the smell of food, right? Someone's baking bread. They say if you're selling a house, you ought to bake an apple pie because then someone might like to really buy that house because of the great smell. That's actually the truth. And then the time of day. Some people say it's 12 o'clock, I better eat. And then finally, again, what I'll be focusing on is portion sizes. And in the United States, our portion sizes have increased by about 300% since the 1970s. We take in, again, a lot more than we actually need. But here's what we do know. A researcher in obesity named Dr. Jim Hill, who actually works with Dr. Court in Colorado, he says that if we can just decrease our calories by 100 per day, we can prevent obesity. Now, mind you, as researchers, we've come to that point where we know a lot of times our research might not lead us to weight loss, but if we can prevent weight gain, we're doing well. 100 calories, you guys, that's not much at all. There's those 100-calorie pack snacks now. I mean, that's very little in a day. But our educational efforts haven't been successful. And I can tell you a lot of my participants in my studies will say to me, "Stella, I know what I need to do, I just don't know how to do it." So in all my research over the years, you know, we've also learned this, that exercise helps to prevent weight regain. And exercise is extremely important, not just for the bone, but also for weight maintenance, etc. But we know that for sure that if you reduce your portion sizes, that's the biggest thing that will lead for you to lose weight. So I thought to myself, what if I change the environment a bit to almost cause a passive intervention that can help people lose weight? I thought, well, here I am. I'm on a college campus. I have dining halls available to me. Maybe what I can do is simply decrease portion sizes to see if that can impact prevention of weight gain in freshmen. And those of you who are freshmen, or those of you who are beyond your freshman year, your fish, I should say, those of you who are fish and not fish, right? Did I get that? Okay, I just learned that. Aren't you proud of me? I learned all these little Aggie things in just less than 24 hours. There's a very significant weight gain in freshman year. Now, that weight gain, by the way, is not always the freshman 15. It ranges from 3 pounds to 25 pounds. But on average, it's like 7 to 15. And so I thought, wow, I have these dining halls that can offer large, unlimited portions. You know, let me work with them. So what I did was I designed a study where we were changed one dining hall where we decreased portion sizes and another where we kept it the same. And we measured all these things, but I'm going to focus on one, and that's body mass index due to the time limitation. And over 6 semesters, we measured people pre and post semester for many things, you know, including body composition. So let's just focus again on body mass index. And again, we had one dining hall where we decreased portion sizes by about 20%. And we had to train the food service staff to do that. And when I met with the food service director, he said to me, "Now, Stella, if I hear one complaint, you're done." And I'm shaking in my shoes, like, oh my gosh. I said, okay, but like, this is an NIH grant. I'll be done my career if you tell me you're done. You know, so I was like, okay, but I listened to him. We got no complaints, just so you know. So we decreased portion sizes. We also decreased the self-serve area. We decreased the spoons, et cetera, in those areas to just try to decrease portion sizes. Students did not know about this, and they could still eat as much as they want. We also trained the food service staff not to say anything to the students because we didn't want them to be biased and say, "Oh, John, you realize you're getting less here? I'll give you a few more pieces of pizza." We just didn't want that to happen. And we monitored that students went to the quote-unquote correct dining hall. That is, if you all were the controls, we wanted you to continue to go to the control dining hall, even though you didn't know you were the controls. And if you were the intervention, we need to ensure that at least 85% of the time you went to that intervention dining hall, right? Because if you didn't, then that kind of would mess up our study. We also measured their 24-hour dietary recalls. And I had my students do that, which was great because they were extremely honest, college student to college student. And we measured physical activity as well. And so here's what our sample size looked like. It wasn't a huge study, about 115 people, men and women. And the makeup was very similar to the university at which we studied this. And here's what we found. Even though these were not significant results, we found that we prevented weight gain in those people in the intervention group. And the reason being is that we did have some people drop out because from freshman to sophomore year, a lot of them moved off campus, so we couldn't keep them in our study. They weren't going to the dining halls anymore. But, and I'll tell you the difference here, there's clinical and statistical significance. So even though statistically by numbers, I didn't get a P of less than 0.05, the clinical significance was this. Again, we showed that there was a slight increase in the control group, a pretty good decrease in the intervention group of almost 2 kilograms. And although that BMI, the body mass index, of a 2% decrease in the intervention group doesn't seem like a lot, the reason why it's clinically significant is because for every 1% above your desirable body mass index, you have a greater than 3% risk of cardiovascular disease. And for every kilogram of weight gain after high school, you have a greater risk of cardiovascular disease as well by about 3% or more. And for every kilogram you lose weight, it decreases your risk of heart disease and diabetes by about the same fold. So it's really important. And I guess going back to Dr. Court's presentation, I always tell my students, chronic disease does not start when you're 50. We call chronic disease chronic because they're chronic. They're starting early in life. So it's really important to consider these things, even though at this moment of your life, you may not be thinking about them. You only need a 5% weight loss. This was shown by a very large trial to improve what we call our cardiometabolic or health, overall health. You don't need to get to a size zero. As a matter of fact, which is no size at all, but I tell my participants that the reason I study obesity is not because I'm trying to make a bunch of airbrushed models. It's because we know, right, that obesity can lead to other diseases. So it has nothing to do with aesthetics for me. It has to do with health. So how can we avoid the muffin top? Okay, the biggest thing I told you today is the last thing. If all you were aware of is your portion sizes, you'd do yourself well. Some of my participants drink lots of soda every day, and I say if you cut back like one a day, you'd probably lose about 12 pounds in a year. But other things, be active. Yes, that is me. I play ice hockey. I've been active my entire life, but I just started playing ice hockey 2 years ago. So it's never too late to try something new. I know ice hockey's not big in Texas. But sleeping well, a good work-life balance, and really just looking again at portion control. Very simple. It takes a little bit of discipline and focus. I was trying to incorporate everybody's talk in here. Some GLUT4 receptors are in there too somehow. But they're very, very focused dogs. I can tell you that my female would be the one who's really looking at the cat, but my male has no clue that the cat's there. That is not a gender thing. It's just my two dogs. Those are my two precious sweethearts, Sasha on the left, Bear on the right. They're both rescues. And I couldn't finish my talk without giving homage to Reveille, right? Let's, yeah, have a good call out for Reveille. I really, really thank you again for your attention. I thank you again to Dr. Lightfoot for inviting me and again for being among such wonderful people who have preceded me and will speak after me. Thank you so much. Thank you. I had to do that.
What a way to end a talk at Texas A&M, huh? We have a question from Eric here in Aggieland. He says, during your study, was the control group allowed to eat outside the dining hall? And if so, how did y'all monitor the portion size of what they actually had?
Yes, they were allowed to eat out of the dining halls, and we couldn't monitor their portions. But what we did was we accounted for as much as we could by measuring their diet records twice a month for during the entire study. Not perfect, mind you, but they were free living, and we had to allow for that.
Yeah, and I had a question from David F. along that line. It says that your study was with college-age students. Would this work with older adults? Because older adults have the same issues.
They do. I do believe it will work with older adults. The idea is a controlled setting, so I've written grants and have not yet been funded with worksite. So where there's worksite cafeterias, for example, where you can monitor the food portions. So although not realistic in the outside setting, if we can kind of work on it in where people are sort of captured, if you will, that might lead them to then look at portion sizes more readily and be a little bit more focused on what they're eating.
So you're almost talking about a social intervention where we have to convince society that it's not really cool to eat as all you can and maybe that we need to think about smaller portions for our health.
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, the expensive restaurants that you go to where you have to use like a magnifying glass to see your food, that's pretty much what a portion size is. I know.
Yeah. I will say that you got the first fan comment that we've ever had.
Mm.
And I won't say it's who it's from, but it's from the University of New England. It says, love you, Stella.
Tell Laura I love her back.
So please join me in thanking Dr. Volpe.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We want to thank you for downloading us and listening. And remember that you can go to our website at huffheinzinstitute.org to download the full video podcast of all of these talks. We want to remind you that our institute and these podcasts are supported by the Huffheinz family and the Omar Smith family. We hope that you have an active and healthy week.